It's like you see a headline about oil prices,
Right.
another about some mining deal, then boom, European gas prices are going haywire. It's easy to think of those as, you know, separate things.
Totally.
But what if they're all connected, like pieces of the same puzzle?
Oh, they are, definitely. It's all part of this global energy picture.
And how that picture affects, well, everything.
Exactly.
So that's what we're going deep on today, right? This whole energy landscape.
100%.
We've got news on oil and gas, of course.
Of course.
But also critical minerals, like the stuff our tech depends on.
Absolutely. Can't forget those.
There's all sorts of big business moves happening.
Oh, that's fashion.
So our mission, if you will, is to connect those dots.
Make sense of the chaos.
Exactly. Give you the insights without getting lost in the weeds.
Right to the good stuff.
So folks can come away and be like, okay, I get what's going on and why I should care.
That's the goal.
Okay, let's jump right into the oil market.
Let's do it.
Feels like a powder keg at the moment, no?
Definitely some tension there.
You've got Trump's policies on Iran still having this ripple effect.
Mm-hmm.
And then OPEC Plus just wants to crank those prices up.
As always.
They've got $75 a barrel for ICE Brent in their sights.
That's their target.
Which, quick reminder, that's the benchmark for global crude oil prices.
Sets the tone for everyone.
And it's been climbing second week in a row.
Upward trend.
What stands out to you about this whole push for higher prices?
Well, the thing is, you'd expect some pushback, right? I mean, the Fed's making noises, things in Ukraine are shaky. That usually makes markets nervous.
Yeah, makes sense.
But this upward trend, it just keeps chugging along. Like, there's this deep belief that oil's going up no matter what.
Interesting.
It's pretty remarkable, honestly.
And then you've got OPEC Plus itself still trying to, like, manage its own members.
Right, the internal game.
They've announced more compensation plans for countries that overproduced.
Gotta keep everyone happy.
These cuts are supposed to go on until June 2026.
It's a long game.
We could be looking at 300, maybe 400,000 barrels a day less this summer.
Not insignificant.
And Iraq, they're getting hit the hardest with the cuts.
They've been pumping a lot.
It makes you wonder, right? How long can they keep doing this, these constant adjustments?
Yeah, that's the big question. Is OPEC Plus actually strong because they can adapt? Or is this a sign that things are, you know, coming apart at the seams?
Because everyone's at their own interests.
Exactly. And keeping everyone on the same page, that's tough.
Okay, so shifting to the U.S. and Iran.
Right.
They've gone and slapped sanctions on this Chinese teapot refiner.
First time for this.
Yep, first time they've targeted one of these smaller independent refineries in Shandong province.
Which is like Teapot Central.
Exactly, huge hub for those.
So this is a big deal.
The company is called Shuguang Luking Petrochemical, and their crime was buying Iranian oil.
Crossing that line.
This feels like a real escalation to me. What do you think?
Oh, totally. Before it was all about ships and banks,
yeah.
You know, disrupting the flow of money.
Making it harder, but not impossible.
Exactly. But now, they're going straight for the buyers.
Yeah.
If this works, if they actually enforce it.
Iran's going to have a tough time selling its oil. A
lot tougher, that's for sure.
Okay, this next story, it's kind of blurring the lines in the energy world.
Oh, how so?
So, Vitol, they're a massive oil trader.
One of the biggest.
They've just dropped $1.65 billion.
Wow.
Yeah, for stakes in Eni's oil and gas assets in West Africa.
Interesting.
This includes a chunk of the Baleine field, remember that, off the Ivory Coast? A
huge discovery back in 21.
That one, plus some LNG assets in Congo, so they're not just trading oil anymore, they're getting into producing it.
That's a big shift.
What do you make of that, this kind of move?
Well, could be a couple things. Maybe they're super bullish on oil and gas, think it's going to be hot for a long time.
Makes sense.
Or maybe it's about control, right? The world's getting a bit crazy.
Unstable, yeah.
So they want to make sure they've got their hands on the supply directly.
So no matter what happens, they're good.
Exactly. It makes you wonder, will we see more of these trader-producer hybrids popping up?
Right, like a whole new breed.
Could be.
Back to OPEC Plus for a sec.
Still making waves.
Kazakhstan's energy minister just up and quit.
Really?
Yeah, amidst all this pressure to stick to the production quotas.
I guess it got to be too much.
Apparently, their Tengiz field's been pumping out 1 million barrels a day.
Wow, that's a lot.
So it's not just about the quotas themselves, right? It's the pressure on these individual countries.
The internal politics of it all.
To either, you know, pump like crazy for their own economy.
Right, short-term gains.
Or play nice with OPEC Plus.
Long-term stability, maybe.
Tough choice.
No kidding. That resignation, it tells you there's some serious debate happening in Kazakhstan.
Yeah. Can't ignore that.
Nope.
Okay, time for a reality check, folks.
What's that?
Geopolitics It's still messing with energy supplies.
Never goes away.
In Colombia, these guerrilla groups, they're blowing up pipelines.
Seriously?
Yeah, the Cano Limon Cavenas pipeline, that's a big one.
That's a major artery.
Plus, another main line. All this oil that's supposed to go from the Andes to the Atlantic coast.
Essential route.
Just stopped.
Crippling.
This is why relying on certain regions can be so risky.
Huge vulnerability.
Because you never know when something like this is going to happen.
And it makes investors nervous, slows down new projects.
Creates this whole ripple effect of uncertainty.
Exactly.
Okay, here's a policy move that caught my eye, and I'm not sure what to make of it.
Lay it on me.
The Trump administration, they're thinking about extending Chevron's sanctions waivers in Venezuela.
Okay, that's interesting.
But at the same time, they might slap tariffs on anyone who's not the U.S. buying Venezuelan oil.
So like a mixed message.
It feels that way, right? They even had this meeting with U.S. oil execs, like trying to get everyone on board.
Hmm. Yeah, this is classic energy politics.
Help me understand this.
Okay, so maybe they want to keep some U.S. access to Venezuelan oil. You know, with everything going on globally.
Keep those options open.
But then, the tariffs. That's about keeping the pressure on Maduro, squeezing him, making it harder for him to sell to others.
So kind of playing both sides?
Yeah, it's a balancing act for sure. Energy security versus foreign policy, always a tough one.
Makes my head spin a little.
It's complicated stuff.
All right, let's talk energy transition for a minute.
The big shift.
Seems not everyone's moving at the same speed, though.
Right?
Equinor, they're Norway's big state oil company.
Big player?
They're actually dialing back some of their climate goals.
Really?
Yeah, their renewable energy targets are lower, and they even scrapped this big plan to spend a ton of money on low-carbon projects.
Interesting. So maybe the reality of the transition is hitting them.
That's what it feels like, right? Like the hype is one thing, but then the actual costs and logistics and profits, that's a whole other beast.
It's easy to make promises when things are theoretical.
But then the rubber hits the road.
And decisions get harder. It makes you think maybe this whole transition is going to be a lot messier and slower than people initially thought.
Oh, for sure. More twists and turns along the way.
Definitely.
Okay, this next story, it's a prime example of what they call resource nationalism.
Oh, yeah, that's always a tricky one.
So Niger, they just kicked out some Chinese oil execs working for Petrotina.
Whoa, what happened?
Apparently, these guys were making 8 times what their Nigerian counterparts were making at this Agadir project.
That's a huge gap.
Yeah, and it didn't go over well. They're basically saying, hey, this is our oil and we're not going to stand for this kind of unfairness.
Makes sense from their perspective.
Right. It's all about control, fairness, making sure the benefits of these resources actually go to the people who live there.
It's a tension you see a lot in resource-rich countries.
Between, like, national interests and the need for foreign investment.
Exactly. It can make things really complicated, lead to disputes, even violence sometimes.
Yeah, definitely something to watch.
For sure.
Switching gears to Europe's gas market.
What's going on over there?
Things are really on edge.
Sensitive, yeah.
So TTF natural gas futures, that's Europe's benchmark, right? They spiked.
Why is that?
There was this report, maybe an attack, we're not totally sure, on the Sudzha gas metering station in Russia.
Hmm, that's up there.
This is the station that's key for any Russian gas going to Europe through pipelines.
Right, so any disruption there is a big deal.
And the market reacted instantly.
Like a shot.
Shows you how reliant Europe still is on Russia and how quickly things can change.
Any little wobble and the whole system feels it.
Totally. Okay, let's talk money for a minute.
Sounds good.
Gold, it's been on a tear, hitting a new all-time high.
Shining bright.
And this seems to be directly tied to what Jerome Powell, the Fed chair, has been saying.
What's he saying?
He's hinting that interest rate cuts, they might not happen as fast as people thought.
Ah, so rates stay higher for longer.
Exactly. He said maybe 2 cuts in 2025, but they're not in a hurry.
Playing it cautious.
And you know that old saying, when rates go up, gold shines.
The classic inverse relationship.
Yep, because if you're not getting much interest on your money, gold starts looking pretty good.
Safe haven asset.
Exactly. Powell's being all cautious and the market's like, time to buy gold.
Makes sense.
Speaking of valuable stuff, the U.S. is taking a pretty big step to boost its own mining.
What are they doing?
Trump just invoked the Defense Production Act.
Wow, that's a big one.
Yeah, usually it's for wartime stuff.
Serious business.
But they're using it to ramp up production of critical minerals.
the stuff our tech can't live without.
Right. And right now, the U.S. gets about 70% of its rare earths from China.
That's a lot of reliance on one source.
And they're not comfortable with that anymore. This is all about security, making sure they've got what they need no matter what.
It's a national security issue, basically.
Exactly. Okay, last couple of stories. From the world of big business.
Hit me.
This deal, Carlyle trying to buy Energene's gas assets in Egypt, Italy, and Croatia.
That was a big one. Almost $1 billion, right?
$945 million, to be exact.
So what happened?
It fell apart. They couldn't get all the government approvals they needed.
The regulatory hurdles.
Italy and Egypt, they just couldn't get it done in time.
Even with all that money on the table.
It shows you, international business, it's not always a smooth ride.
Especially in energy, yeah. Lots of moving parts, national interests. It can get messy.
For sure.
So, deal's off then.
Completely dead.
Wow.
Okay, last one. Saudi Aramco, they're on a shopping spree.
Oh, yeah. What are they buying?
They're buying up gas stations, basically, expanding their retail presence.
So not just producing the oil, but selling it directly to people.
Exactly. They already bought a fuel retailer in the Philippines.
Right. I remember that.
Now they're going after this Latin American company, Primax. They operate in Peru, Colombia, Ecuador.
It's going global.
Yep. And they're not messing around. Aramco's ambitions, they go way beyond just oil production.
It's about controlling the whole chain, from well to gas tank.
Makes them less reliant on just selling crude, gives them more stability, more ways to make money.
Smart move, long term.
Okay, last bit, and it's a bit of a somber note.
What happened?
Heathrow Airport, you know, one of the busiest in the world.
Yeah, major hub.
Had to shut down completely.
Whoa, why?
A fire at an electrical substation nearby.
Oh, no.
Took the whole thing offline. They're saying there could be more disruptions.
That's going to cause chaos.
Oh, yeah. Travel nightmares, businesses impacted, the whole thing.
It's a reminder how fragile things can be.
Totally. We rely on this infrastructure so much, and when it fails, it's a big deal.
We take it for granted until it's gone.
So as we wrap up, there are some big themes that have come out of this deep dive.
Definitely a lot to unpack.
We've seen how much power geopolitics still has, how it can send energy prices soaring, disrupt supplies.
It's the underlying current, always there.
Then there's OPEC plus Stone trying to hold things together, but each country has its own agenda.
That tension's never going to go away.
And we can't forget about monetary policy, what the Fed does, how that affects things like gold.
The money moves markets.
And this whole energy transition, well, it's not going to be a straight line to a greener future.
Lots of bumps along the way.
And then you've got all this business activity, deals happening, some falling apart, companies trying to figure out their place in this changing world.
It's dynamic, that's for sure.
The key takeaway, I think, is how connected everything is. What happens in one corner of the world, it can affect us all.
It's a web, a global web.
So as you go about your day, think about these stories, how they might fit into your understanding of what's going on.
Connect those dots.
Exactly. And here's a final question for you to ponder. Of all the things we talked about today, all these pressures and changes happening.
Right.
What do you think is going to have the biggest impact on the global economy in the next year? Just something to think about.
Lots to consider.
That's for sure.
Thanks for joining us.
Until next time, folks.
Stay informed.
And stay curious.
Absolutely.